Window World is proud to present Kevin Keatsman Has Issues. Simply the best for less at WindowsKansasCity.com.
We have tons of football headed your way on this episode of KKHI as Stan Weber will be joining us shortly. And we got a lot to talk about. We'll speak about the evolution of football as the Chiefs and Eagles get ready to play. And we talk about that once key stat in the NFL of turnover margin not affecting the best two teams in football. We'll get Stan's take on where football is. We'll talk about the Big 12 changing tiebreaker rules in the middle of the season, Missouri hosting Florida, Kansas quarterback quandary, and all kinds of great stuff, including those that are in and those that are out in the AFC playoffs. That's coming up with Stan Weber in just a few minutes. A couple of big stories here to touch on before we get to that. And the first is one that, you know, it will get absolutely no traction. We're all going to get upset about this. We're going to spit until we're blue in the face, upset over what's going on. And nothing's going to come of it as the Uniparty is running the United States of America. And that is up to 300 demonstrators, pro-Hamas, pro-Palestine demonstrators, in D.C. on Wednesday night outside the Democratic National Committee headquarters on Capitol Hill, protesting and becoming violent. They brought pepper spray, they swung chains, they threw punches, they pushed, they shoved, they had to be restrained. Six Capitol Police officers were hurt, and only one person was arrested. One. They closed the Capitol, they closed the DNC. The people inside were basically sequestered. There was nothing they could do until the violence and the crazy protesters had left. These people are screaming for a ceasefire from a group that started this. These people essentially support Hamas starting this war with Israel, lobbing those hundreds of rockets and missiles into Israel on October 7th, and now they're demanding a ceasefire. Oh, we surrender. Now that you're retaliating, now that we had our little guys fly in on their little gliders and shoot up all these young people at a music festival and behead them and take them back and rape them and torture them and hold them hostage, after we did that, the retaliation, well, we don't like that. We want to stop now. Yeah, should have thought of that before you started it. Polling in America is all over the place on this, by the way. You can find all kinds of different polls that tell you what our support is for Israel, what the support is for ceasefires. It's not unanimous, and it's not great. We're a country that's splintered and fractured, which is very typical of a country being run by the Democrat Party. It's the way they like us. They like us fighting amongst each other. But this event was pretty simple. These pro-Hamas people were like, hey, though many were claiming that they vote, my question is, how many of them are here illegally? Not illegally. How many of them are not citizens? Anybody that was there on the Capitol assaulting police officers in an insurrection that is not a citizen of this country should immediately be deported. Gone. You get nothing. We're putting you on a plane. You're out of here. We don't care where you live, what your belongings are. You're just out. You're gone. You're out. Those that were citizens should be arrested. This should be an investigation exactly like January 6th. Surveil the footage, identify the perpetrators, find out who sprayed pepper spray, find out who hurt the cops, find out who swung a punch, find out who breached that building because they got inside, arrest every single one of them, prosecute them, and put them in jail for 2 or 3 years for what? For protesting. That's right, for taking the First Amendment too far. You do this with Trump voters and Trump supporters, but you will not do it with pro-terrorist demonstrators. This is where we are in America. I can't believe it. This one, maybe more clearly than all the others, stands out as these people literally are protesting at the Democrat net, because they're targeting the Democrats. They're like, hey, those that are American citizens are saying, we're pro-Palestine, we're pro-Hamas. We voted for you. We believed in the Democrats. We don't like the Republicans. We believed in you. And now you're letting us down by supporting Israel. And we're coming after you. Because that's what terrorists do. Terrorists turn violent. They don't really care much about the free speech. They have free speech because they're violent. In every country that they're in, they'll say what they want because they're violent. But ultimately, they don't believe free speech does anything. They don't believe protesting does anything. This is going to ramp up. We have six injured cops. It's just the beginning. As the war goes on, it is just the beginning. These people are getting emboldened. They've now watched 300 people assemble and only one got arrested. They brought pepper spray. They swung punches. They breached the building and nobody got arrested. Because why? They didn't vote for Trump. They voted for Democrats. These are pissed off Democrats is what they are. The ones that are American citizens are pissed off Democrats. And they don't get arrested. Pissed off Democrats don't get arrested. BLM rioters don't get arrested. Antifa don't get arrested. Pro-Palestinian Hamas supporters don't get arrested. Even when you're mad at the Democrats, which in most of these cases, that's who they're mad at. When BLM was burning down our cities, these are cities where the Democrats run the place. They're mad at the Democrats. Everything we see is in a big city where people are pissed off at Democrats. And there are no arrests. But a bunch of people without pepper spray and no guns and no knives go into the Capitol building and they all get prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law because they voted wrong. The message to the American public is very clear. How you vote matters. If you vote Democrat, we're not going to arrest you for hardly anything. It's going to take something real to get arrested in this country if you vote for us. This is not America. This happened on the heels of 300,000 Israel supporters gathering on the mall with no arrests, no incidents, no violence, no pushing, no shoving, no spray paint, no pepper spray, no anything. 300,000 peacefully demonstrating. And the very next day, 300 people demonstrate and 6 cops are hurt and 1 person is arrested. Man, oh man, are we in trouble? I got a couple of emails yesterday from people saying, hey, you seeing this about the Royals and maybe a new stadium and the things that are going on? I said, you know, the story, I'll be honest with you, and you may not like hearing this because you may be really into it and really excited, and I don't want to diminish that for you. And I certainly don't want to disparage it. But I'm bored by the Royals talking about a new stadium. I'm bored by it. They don't know what they're doing. The city doesn't know what it's doing, and the county doesn't know what it's doing. They just don't. So the latest is a report by Sam McDowell that the Royals are now talking with the owners of the old Kansas City Star building, which is across 670 Highway from Sprint Center, Power and Light, and all that stuff. And they're talking about that land. I guess the building would get torn down. There's some parking and infrastructure there and cheap land. The people that own the building will sell it for pennies on the dollar because they should never have bought it 5 years ago or whenever they bought it. The Star was having a fire sale because they were moving out. They rent a little space now, I think, in Crown Center. Very small offices for the Kansas City Star now. They certainly don't need those offices. It's got a printing press in there, but I don't know that they use it. That building is not very old. That thing is only like 15, 17 years old. It was a $1 billion building. They spent all kinds of money on it. The future of newspapers is great. And then whoosh, off a cliff it went. So the Royals are looking at that site and talking with the mayor about his dream. And his dream is building a cover over 670 and turning it into a park downtown, which can be done. You can tunnel all of that at 670 and still have your roads to the outside, and you can build green spaces and probably plant trees, and there's a lot of things you could do there. This sounds like a really cool idea. I would get excited, except these people don't know what they're doing. Nobody does. So I can't tell you that this is going to happen. Sounds like a pipe dream. But now, after all this with the Royals in September, we're going to tell us where they decided between two spaces. They're now looking at a third. They're at zero. They're at square one is where the Royals are on a downtown ballpark. It's unsurprising at best. I got a wonderful email from a gentleman named Mike who emails me regularly. And he said he went on Amazon yesterday and he sent me a screenshot and he was ordering $5, $6, $8 toys, apparently a bunch of them on Amazon, and sending them to Roberts Robinson Chevrolet Buick GMC in Excelsior Springs. I said, man, that is the coolest thing ever. We talked about this yesterday on the podcast. They're starting the toy drive on Saturday at Roberts Robinson. I'm going to be going up on Monday. My buddy Chris over at B-Stock called, said, count us in. We want to buy some toys. He gave me a dollar amount. I'm going to shop for him. I'm going to shop for Crooked Tail Media on behalf of the patrons. Okay, the patrons are involved in this. If you're in the patron program, I'm taking the patrons' money this month, and we're going to buy toys and support this toy drive for Roberts Robinson in Excelsior Springs. I just think it's the right thing to do. They have a charity called Meet the Need, and Mike Robinson's one of the most charitable guys ever, not just with his church, but with all kinds of different groups and charities around Kansas City and around Excelsior Springs, and that's awesome. So we're going to jump in and help with the toy drive any way we can. I'm going to go shopping this weekend and buy a bunch of toys. We're going to go see Mike and his crew on Monday at the dealership and drop those toys off. And I thank Mike the emailer, a different Mike, who is ordering cheap toys, buy a $6 toy on Amazon and have it shipped to Roberts Robinson in Excelsior Springs. I mean, that would just be awesome if you did that. And their toy drive runs through the middle of December. That's when they'll wrap them all up and give them to kids. And wouldn't it be awesome if we overwhelmed them to where they had trouble wrapping them all? Let's do that. Every toy drive bucket I see is empty. I saw an empty one at Quick Trip. I was at a bank and saw one empty. Let's fill them up at Roberts Robinson and make a difference in that part of our community, in and around Excelsior Springs and the communities around there. Let's do it. With Roberts Robinson, Chevrolet, Buick, GMC, we appreciate your help. It's very simple. It's really simple. The shipping address is just Roberts Robinson. Send it to Mike Robinson. He'll open them up, they'll wrap them, and they'll be good to go. That'd be awesome. You don't even have to go there. But if you live by there, please swing by the dealership and drop some. They're not going to try to sell you a car or anything. Just drop the toys in the bin. Swing them by. It begins on Saturday, the toy drive for Meet the Need in Excelsior Springs with Roberts Robinson. Really cool stuff. I want to thank our friends for doing that. And B-Stock for jumping in on that. That's pretty cool stuff. KKHI, before Stan Weber comes on, is brought to you by Back 9 Development. Stan knows TJ. I think he knows him very well. They're sort of in the same industry. Stan's a CEO and president of Tower Properties. Back 9 Development, you know, they develop properties. They're a great custom home builder. I know that Stan and TJ know one another. I don't know how close of a friendship they have, but they have one thing in common. They're tremendous business people that know the difference between a perfect project and a stinker of a project. And they get it done right. They do things the right way. That's Back 9 Development. If you're looking for a custom builder, Back 9 Development could be just for you. TJ Volkanskis would love the opportunity to sit down with you and discuss your project at 785-236-0161 or online at back9development.com. Advanced Medical Imaging, see what is inside. Schedule your appointment for today or tomorrow. Why wait 6 weeks? You go to the doctor and they see something they don't like and they say you need an MRI or a CT scan. You're going to wait 6 weeks? Advanced Medical Imaging will take your insurance, okay, for these things. When you're referred by a doctor, you don't have to go where they tell you. You don't have to stay in their hospital chain. You can go to medimageks.com. If you've been scheduled 3 weeks out right now somewhere else, call Advanced Medical Imaging with your insurance card in hand and say, can I come tomorrow and get in and get the scan done? I don't want to wait 3 weeks. I'm not sleeping well. I'm worried about what I got. Please, can I come take care of this? 785-856-0224. Advanced Medical Imaging is online at medimageks.com. And I mentioned B-Stock. They still have the 85-inch TVs left for half price. Half price Samsung Q60B 85-inch QLED Smart TV 4K overstock sale. They'll even deliver it cheap to your home in the Kansas City area or even farther away. If you buy several of them, I feel sure there's a price. They'll drive a couple hours away and bring them to you. If you've got a restaurant or a sports bar, you want to put these things up in a business somewhere, $899, that's half price. $899 for 85-inch QLED Samsungs. Amazing. Bstock.net, 14680 South Flaming Road. Don't forget their red tag specials every single week. Online at thekklist.com. Go to thekklist.com and you'll see all of our sponsors and more. And you'll see the red tag auction item. This week it's a mini computer for $999. That's where the bidding started. These things never go over $100, ever. Not very many people go there and bid. You can basically just steal something they want to get rid of. Thekklist.com, you'll see red tag auction. Just click on it, and there are deals there every week from bstock.net. Love that. All right, time for Stan Weber and our football feast. We got a lot to talk about with Stan the Man on KKHI. Hit it.
The KKHI Conversation is brought to you by Fry Orthodontics, where your smile is just the start. Online at fryorthodontics.com.
My man Stan Weber loves football so much he has turned down the trip of the year for calling K-State Sports, and that is a week in the Bahamas with the basketball team. just so he can be in Lawrence Saturday night for KUK State. That is the easiest prediction ever that Stan will be at the football game. Hello, Stan. How are you, sir?
Yes, Kevin, pretty easy. In my 37th year doing K-State football on radio, this will be my 453rd straight K-State football game. So the rules are pretty simple, and Wyatt Thompson is going to join me as well. They don't ask us. They just say, you guys stick with football. That's the normal thing. And usually we miss these exotic trips that K-State basketball may take when they leave the country or have big-time tournaments. If they're not really here close by, we often miss them. Last year, we were so lucky to go to the Grand Cayman Islands. So let's look at this positively. We got to go to the Grand Cayman Islands, really get to know Jerome Tang. And that's when I think his team came together and transformed themselves into the team that ended third in the conference and went to the Elite Eight. It was right there. They won a close game, a couple of close games. They had time together. And this coaching staff loves the islands. So there they are in the Bahamas this time without me because they play Friday night at 5:30. Sunday around noon Central Time, no chance of making it back and forth or getting it all done. So it's on to the Sunflower Showdown and game 453 straight for me.
All right, let's talk some football. And I want to start with the pros here. The Chiefs have maybe the regular season game of the year, Monday Night Football, Chiefs and Eagles Super Bowl rematch. And I want to start with a theme of this game before we talk about the actual matchup. We've talked many times through the years about Patrick Mahomes changing the sport, and I believe he has absolutely changed the sport. And the way you play quarterback, which is the fundamental number one thing in this sport, we're looking at Caleb Williams at USC. He's basically a Mahomes clone. He's done everything he can the last 2 years to copy everything Mahomes does, throwing style, sidearms, back across against the grain, everything. So the younger quarterbacks are all doing that. That's not the new news. We've all seen the evolution of the position. What is surprising to me is you don't hear much criticism of Patrick Mahomes' turnovers this year, and he hasn't been great. There's been some of them have been his fault. They go through receivers' hands, whatever. The Chiefs are -4 in turnover ratio this year, but they have a top two defense in the NFL. So it isn't the defense's fault. It's the offense turning it over more. The Eagles are the same way. Their offense has been great, but it does turn it over quite a bit. Is Marty Schottenheimer rolling over in his grave that turnovers no longer matter in football or in professional football, or are the Chiefs and Eagles just anomalies?
Well, the Chiefs and Eagles are very good, first of all, to overcome that. So most coaches are going to say turnovers are a big key still. But Marty Schottenheimer, Dick Vermeil, who had all the stats on turnovers, those guys would be pulling their hair out right now with what's going on. And what's going on is a whole new mentality. The analytics and the acceptability of the fans for coaches to not be criticized for doing crazy things has overtaken the game. Now, Patrick Mahomes has shown you that you can go out and make plays. People are trying to find the next Patrick Mahomes. They're using younger quarterbacks. They want dual threat quarterbacks. We see a lot of trends coming into the NFL. And obviously, Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid are leading it. But what's happening, Kevin, right now is the reason why turnovers aren't as damaging is because there is a new mentality that says we can go for fourth down. Well, Kevin, if you go for fourth down at the 50-yard line, or hey, even in your own territory now, if you miss it, isn't that a turnover? So they have just accepted that going for fourth down may turn into a turnover. So turnovers don't hurt you as much. It's about making plays. The game has changed to where coaches are taught. These analytic companies are saying this over and over again, and you're starting to hear it coach talk, Kevin. Listen closely to the interviews. Now, Andy Reid's not going to say anything, but listen to the other coaches around the country, NFL or college, and they say, field goals don't beat us. Or on offense, we've got to score touchdowns to win. So the game has turned into, how do you do in the red zone? How do you do it with fourth down makes and get 7 points instead of three? Oh, by the way, no one talks about this, Kevin, but if you miss going for fourth down at the 15-yard line going in the red zone per se, and you missed the fourth down, you gave up 3 points. But no one looks at it that way, right? The analytics all say the game is about getting 7 instead of 3. Getting that extra 4 points is where it's all at. So these guys have started to accept aggressiveness, touchdowns. We don't care about field goals. We don't care about missing fourth down. You do all that, Kevin, you can't care as much about turning it over. Who cares if you turn it over on third down by trying to fit a pass in, or you go for it on fourth down and miss it? You know, it's really no different. So the mindset has changed dramatically, and it really has been go make plays. The game is about making plays, not minimizing mistakes.
And it's so fun to watch. Yet we've had complaining earlier this year that in the NFL. Scoring is down. And we've just watched a couple of record low Las Vegas over-unders in college football. Last week, the Iowa-Rutgers game total was only 28 points. So it really hasn't created, I feel like the scoring was at an all-time high about 5 years ago, and we're not really there. Maybe it's because when you cross midfield, instead of trying a 53-yard field goal, you're going for fourth and two. Then if you fail, the other team doesn't have great field position, and if you hold them from getting 30 yards, they got to punt it away. I don't know why, but it hasn't really equated to a whole lot of high-scoring games taking all these chances. Why is that?
Well, you just mentioned it right there. The points are not going to build up as quickly because people aren't going to accept the 3 points. And what they don't understand, what is not in the analytics, Kevin, is the psychology of the game.
Right.
You go down and kick a field goal, it's worth something. You start the game, you drive down 8 plays, get down to the 18-yard line, and these coaches just say, well, we got to have 7. We got to set the tone, and they don't make it. It's 0-0, where if you go out and kick the field goal, I tell you, you've greased the skids. You've given your offense a confidence level when they come off the sideline that they're more likely to drive down the field the next time. So we're getting away from consistency because raising kids, running operations, Kevin, consistency matters, right? When everyone in the organization or the family knows what the expectations are, they don't change. You get into a rhythm. You start doing things with discipline that you don't even realize you're doing. You act like it's your choice instead of your parents when you're a kid. It starts flowing. Well, we've gone exactly the opposite of that. Kevin, if you got the ball at the 30-yard line and it's 3rd and 6, and now you're a player on a team in the NFL or college, do you say, oh, wait a second, we're going to go for 4th down this time? Or maybe, oh, no, we're not going to go for 4th down. You never know. I mean, what the heck's going on? So I think you lead to inconsistency. You accept a lot of things that are going on. You accept some failures. And when your coaches don't make sound decisions or it doesn't follow a logic stream, it's just fine. So
okay.
It's just right now, we're just at a point right now where everything goes and no one's taking the points and it's fun football. I mean, this is good football. It's so exciting. We have high scoring games. We have Iowa games. Remember that 28 points?
Yeah.
That under you talked about, over under? They went under.
Under.
They only scored 22 total.
I know. So here's what's really interesting. The teams that you follow most closely, Kansas State in college, then the Chiefs and the Cowboys, they all have excellent defenses. So my question would be, in this era of analytics, I don't think analytics ever applies to all teams equally. Should Andy Reid and Chris Kleiman and the Cowboys, we won't say the coach's name because we know you don't like him. I won't even say it. I won't even bring it up.
You told me first. You told me first not to like him a long time ago.
I won't even say his name. So should they be the teams that don't take as many chances? Because, look, the Chiefs have the number 2 scoring defense in the NFL. Maybe this is the time Andy doesn't take as many chances.
It is interesting. I think you're exactly right. The thing that you said right there was analytics should not apply the same for everybody. And you were on the leading edge of saying going for 2 points all the time. But you didn't say for every team in the NFL. You said for Dick Fields, Kansas City Chiefs with Trent Green. Remember that?
I do.
All offense, no defense. If people would think about what you're saying, you were saying for the Kansas City Chiefs, you ought to go for 2. You didn't say that for the whole NFL, and you're making that distinction very well here. But everyone's running with the pack, Kevin. They're all looking at the same stats. And I'm telling you, I know so many coaches who get so much of this data, they're all reading the same thing, and they study for 2 hours a week with their coaching staff every situation in the country. Every game in the country, they go over the ones, and it just starts going to a homogenous mentality of, here's what we need to do. It says go like this. They need to do, and Andy Reid is going to be better at this than everybody else, and Bill Belichick, if his team ever gets good enough again to matter, that it's your team. Taking field goals sometimes is super smart. It's your team, and what they should do is how you should use the analytics. But that's not what's happening, Kevin. I'm telling you, everyone's running to the same conclusion, which is just erratic behavior and crazy thoughts. You're tossing a game, and the score is 13-13. There are 3 minutes left in the game, and you got 4th and 4 at the 14 going in. We see coaches not take the lead by 3. Say, no, we got to score a touchdown here. Touchdowns win games. You're like, dude, it's 13-13 with 3 minutes left in the game. This is more like an Iowa game. But people aren't reacting to it, Kevin. It is amazing to me to hear coaches talk, and I just shake my head and go, no, put it in context with your team,
okay.
Please.
Okay, so I have this thing with my mom when we play blackjack. She loves to go to the casino and play blackjack. And she hates hitting on 16 because she feels like she breaks all the time. And, you know, when the dealer has a 10 up, you're supposed to take a hit, whatever. And she waffles every time. And I've told her for years, she goes, Kevin, you just instantly make your decision. I said, Mom, I'm always or never. When I sit down, I'm either always going to hit on those cards or I'm never going to hit on those cards. I never try to guess. There's no reason to guess. And so I think that's what the coaches are doing. I think they've just said, we're always going to do this. I think Chris Kleiman a few weeks ago playing against Texas had first and goal at the 7 to win the game in overtime. And he said, hey, the chart says we got about an 83% chance of winning right here because all we got to do is get in the end zone and the game is over. I think he said right then and there, I'm going 4 snaps if I have to because that's what the computer says. But once you get to fourth down, your odds aren't 83%. So listen, that's the reason I actually like what he did because I play cards that way. I'm like, always or never, it will eventually even out. And I think that's what he was doing there. Do you think that's what the coaches are doing? They're just saying the analytics say this, so we're always going to do it?
Well, Chris Kleiman is a little different because we've gone over this. He told his team before the overtime when Texas got the ball first, we're not going to second overtime. So that's more of a decision made with leadership that everybody knows and with conviction. And that is more about how your program works for this year, next year, and 3 years. So you put your neck out there, you got to live with it. So you got to go. But back to normal coaches, I think that they just keep looking at the data. And I told you this joke. All the listeners know this joke. You can play along with me. I say to my wife, hey, what should you do on fourth down? She says, look at the book. And I say, well, what does the book say? She says, go for it. And that's exactly what it is, Kevin. Everybody says go for it every time. Watch, Mike Tirico is doing a good job with this on NBC because he's smart and he just goes, the book says go for it here. But it always says go for it. They don't value field goals. They don't value the psychology and momentum of the game. I think they've lost their heads. It's okay to be aggressive. I love football with aggression, but you need to do it with your team. Dick Vermeil's Trent Green Chiefs should be different. Yeah. Than a team that's really good on defense.
They
and that
really
distinction
good.
Is not being made because everybody's reading the same numbers every week. Yeah. The data's flowing in. They keep saying, go for it on fourth down every time and you'll win.
Yeah, my argument with that team was your defense stinks. Your offense can be your defense if you get some two-point conversions. And I've said for years, Mike Tomlin did this a few years ago. I don't care if I've got any kind of a good offense. Anytime I'm playing at home, and I take a 6-0 lead with a touchdown, I'm going for 2. Every single time. Because if I fail, I'm going to score another touchdown in this game, and I'll get it back. And if I get it, now I'll kick extra points the rest of the way. But I've got an 8-point lead, which is just if you look at the statistics on it, it's just phenomenal what the 8-point lead does for you compared to the 7-point lead as far as percentage.
And it's psychology. Oregon Absolutely. Did that when they were the best team in the country.
Yeah.
With Marcus Mariota. Every first touchdown of the game, road or home.
Right.
Every first touchdown of the game, they went for 2. And if they got up 8-0, it was a burden on the opponent.
Especially at home.
The whole day.
Especially at home because your opponent's defense is on their heels and the crowd's going crazy and the whole thing. I just have always thought that. All right, let's move on to the matchup itself, Stan. The Chiefs and Eagles on Monday night. And it's a Super Bowl rematch, but we're hearing all kinds of Chiefs players saying they were embarrassed defensively in this game, giving up 35 points in the Super Bowl. And they have something to prove. It's pretty amazing that professional athletes can find a way to say, after winning 2 Super Bowls, we have something to prove on a Monday night game at home against the Eagles, but it sounds like that's the rallying cry this week. How do you see the matchup?
Well, it's a good rallying cry because there are some audio out there after the game was over with the defensive players going, you know, that was awesome. We won the Super Bowl, but I just think I'm starting to understand our defense. So, Steve Spagnuolo, we talked about changing football just a second ago. He is a guy that's changing it as well. Like, let's go for it. Let's be aggressive. And that's what the Chiefs are. The defense is very, very good. These pros know how to turn it up every week. It's unbelievable how they physically get ready, mentally get ready, and make it a big deal. Look for disrespect. Look for something new to earn and all of that. But this one really should deserve the hype. Monday Night Football are words that really carry a lot of cachet. You and I know Sunday Night Football is a lot bigger. right now. No doubt about it. But it sounds really cool, and it's a big-time Monday Night Football game because these two teams were awesome in the Super Bowl. It was a toss-up game. The Chiefs did an amazing job with Patrick Mahomes coming back. But these two teams have followed that up with being the best in their respective conference right now. And we're deep into the season. We're more than halfway into the season. These teams are turning out to be what they are this year. And the Eagles are the likely team to be back in the Super Bowl. The Chiefs are the likely team to be back in the Super Bowl. And they're playing each other in this ball game. This game is only being scheduled because there's 17 games, Kevin. That's notable. For those, you have your formula for setting up schedules. You play one division in the opposite conference, like the Chiefs would play one division in their four teams. But with an extra game, they said we're going to have one more crossover game. There's five intra-conference games now, and the Chiefs got the Eagles. So we get to see this game. Fortunately, it's an Arrowhead. I look at this game as one where the Eagles have found a way to win. That's what they're about this year. That's how they've grown up, Kevin. They're not playing as good a football as they were last year. They're not so far. But they've learned how to win like the Chiefs learned how to win. And that has been something that's a real growth factor. Don't ever cut your team down if they don't play great football every minute of the day, but always find a way to win. Welcome to Philadelphia Eagle football right now. I think Jalen Hurts is a big key in this game, Kevin. He has been battling a knee injury. He hasn't been running as much and with as much physicality. He's turned into a passing quarterback. He's a gutsy dude. He has the perfect mindset to be an NFL superstar. He didn't get caught up and be a big deal in Philadelphia. Respect the heck out of him. But I think in this game, Kevin, he's going to have to put his shoulder pads into the game, or he's going to have to put his knee at risk by running the football. Will he scramble for first downs? I know he does the tush push. I know he does the quarterback sneak. That's just part of their offense in third and fourth down. He's been able to do that. But his scrambling out of the pocket is going to be a big key because the Chiefs defense is so good and better than it was in the Super Bowl. His receivers are elite. Their passing game, therefore, is elite. But don't the Chiefs match up well with that, Kevin?
Yep.
I mean, I don't sit there and go, oh, boy, how are you going to guard these receivers? Because I respect A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith. These guys are really good. Julio Jones is on the roster right now. Dallas Goedert, if he's available. He was injured a couple weeks ago. I don't know if he'll play. But their tight end's good, their receivers are really good, and the quarterback can throw the ball to them. But I think the Chiefs will mitigate that, Kevin. I think that'll be an even battle. You know, back and forth, a play here, a play there. But the difference becomes, will Jalen Hurts scramble on a play on 3rd and 7 when his guys are guarded and he throws an incompletion and punts, or does he scramble and get a first down and keep him alive? I think that's where the game's going to go because I think the Chiefs are more predictable in this situation. Defense will be really good. They'll match up with the Eagles. They'll give up a few things here and there. And Patrick Mahomes will find a way to make winning plays no matter what he has to do, scramble or run. I think Jalen Hurts is the variable. If he plays his very best game, I think the Eagles have a big chance of winning this game because it means more to the Eagles than it does to the Chiefs right now, Kevin. This is a big hurdle for them. They see those Chiefs uniforms. They know it means Super Bowl-level football. They lost last year. And you look at the history of football in the NFL, when teams have matched up in a Super Bowl, and then they rematch the next year. The team that lost is the one that really has the focus and really wants to get over the hump and plays their best football. So I think the Eagles are going to play great, but that isn't going to be good enough to beat the Chiefs if Jalen Hurts doesn't scramble and hurt the Chiefs
right
on keeping a few third downs alive. So that's my big variable. I think generally I give the game to the Chiefs, a more lower scoring game, not the 35-point game, more in a 25-point game. I think these two teams, though, have proven why aren't they the best in the AFC and the NFC? They probably are.
All right, the AFC is a really interesting place right now. The Texans are officially in at this point if the season ended today. The Bills, the Bengals, and the Chargers are all out. Does it stay that way? Is this a real threat? How much trouble are the Bills, Bengals, and Chargers in?
Wow, this is falling so well for the Chiefs. I know you probably talked about it in spades, Kevin, but the Chiefs had a week off after winning their game against the Dolphins, which is a significant win, and everything fell their way. It's why I love the NFL. Rooting against others is as valuable as rooting for your team. And the Chiefs had all the games go their direction. How about Cincinnati getting upset by Houston? What a big game that was. So right now, when you look at the playoffs, I don't think it's going to last this way. I think the Bills are in a lot of trouble because they're pointing fingers. For instance, the offensive coordinator gets fired by the head coach after the defense couldn't stop the Denver Broncos down the stretch, and the special teams made dumb decisions and the defense, and they blame the offensive coordinator. So there are really some problems at Buffalo. They don't have much of a threat on offense other than throwing the ball to Diggs. That's about the only thing that works for them. But let's get off of Buffalo here for a second. Right now, if the playoffs started today, the Chiefs would have the easiest run ever because the teams that are in the playoffs right now are up-and-coming teams. And you can't just do it with talent. You've got to have the mentality of knowing what the playoffs are like, that experience, Kevin. And right now you look around and you're going, well, Jacksonville has some. Houston has zero. Pittsburgh is like the first team in NFL history to have eight games played and been outgained every game and have a winning record. So Mike Tomlin's coaching is off the charts for the Pittsburgh Steelers. But the team isn't that good, Kevin. You know that. They're not that scary at all. So really the thing to watch is, will the Bengals get back in the fray? Will the Bills and Chargers? Those are the three teams to watch who are actually more dangerous to the Chiefs than the teams that are in the playoffs. The good news is they may not, and probably not all three, and maybe only one of the three will make it back, Kevin. Good news for the Chiefs. Bad news is, if one of these teams like Cincinnati is the seventh seed, and even the Chiefs get a bye, Cincinnati is likely to go win a game and then be the Chiefs' first playoff game. So this isn't good. I do not want to see the Chiefs play Buffalo or Cincinnati in the first divisional round. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
This isn't laying out perfectly. It looks so good. It's off the charts right now. But if Buffalo gets the sixth seed and Cincinnati's the seventh seed and the Chiefs are the one seed and they have to beat those teams in game one before they even go to the AFC championship game, that's a little worrisome for me. So I've got a mixed thought process right now. Yeah. But for instance, tonight, if you're watching the Baltimore Ravens play football against the Cincinnati Bengals, you'd much rather have Baltimore win than Cincinnati because Cincinnati's dangerous and Baltimore's kind of unreliable. But the most dangerous team left is Cincinnati, and the Chargers and Buffalo don't make the playoffs would be the Ravens. They're totally inconsistent, but if they put it together for one game, they got legitimate coaching, legitimate defense, and some talent on offense that's weird to play against. So the Ravens are probably the most dangerous team in the AFC right now. Maybe Jacksonville, but probably the Ravens, unless Cincinnati and Buffalo pop their head back up.
All right, on to college football with Stan Weber. It's brought to you by TicketsForLess.com. If you want to go to Columbia and see the Tigers and Gators this week, KU, K-State, Saturday night in Lawrence, or Monday night football at Arrowhead Stadium, don't forget the promo code is KKHI. Your football ticket order will be discounted somewhere between 5 and 15%, depending on the seats you choose and the game you choose. TicketsForLess.com, promo code KKHI. Amini's at 105th and Metcalf, your headquarters for the best leather theater seating and all the great things that you need in your man cave to watch football. It is Amini's. They've got game table sales going on right now for the holidays. Whether you're looking for pool table, shuffleboard, air hockey, it's all at Amini's, 105th and Metcalf in Overland Park. This is Amini's. And with the holidays around the corner, there's somebody on your list that would love something from MyPillow.com. That's right. Maybe it's even your little pooch. Dog beds, pet blankets, or new premium pillows for you and your family. Also got great slippers for gifts ideas this holiday season. MyPillow.com. Everything discounted with the promo code KKHI. All right, Stan, we got some issues in college football here as well. And let's start with this one. K-State and KU are playing this week, and there's two issues with each team that we're going to discuss. K-State fans are beside themselves over what's happening with the Big 12 tiebreaker scenario. I think it's a joke that we're not going to have divisions going forward. We'll get into that discussion another day. But you and I both agree that the new Big 12 needs divisions, probably four-team pods. There's going to be 16 teams. We'll do that another day. Right now, are they changing the rules in the middle of the season? What's going on with this tiebreaker? Because Kansas State fans are livid if they win their last two games that they were in a spot where they thought they would be in, and now they're in a spot where they think they're going to be out?
Yes, it is a big, big mess, and there are going to be unbelievable arguments. I don't think with the new Big 12 coming together and with conference realignment being the situation it has been, Kevin, and with the Big 12 kind of getting a good spot with Brett Yormark as the commissioner, I generally think the Big 12 is going to all collectively take a deep breath and deal with whatever comes out of this. But if it were normal times, I could see lawyers immediately making their play because the Big 12 wrote a tiebreaker into place that is written down. Like, if you study this, if we were talking in July, Kevin, and you said, what's the tiebreaker? I would tell you what the tiebreaker is, and I would assume, because it's written down, that's what it would be for the whole year. That is not happening. Okay. At least that's what it appears to not happen.
Let's educate everybody here from the start. We're talking about a three-way tiebreaker between K-State, OU, and Oklahoma State. And the rule says if they didn't all play each other during the course of the season, then the tiebreaker kicks down below to the best opponents that they have in common. Correct? That's what the rule says, correct?
Well, I want to get away from just those three teams because there's multiple options.
But this is the one that has them really angered.
Yeah, like Oklahoma and K-State could be angered under this one because
they didn't play each other. Of those three schools, they did not all play head-to-head. So the rule says we kick it down to teams that you did all play.
Yeah, it says head-to-head in a three-way tiebreaker, best cumulative win percentage in games among the tied teams. If not every tied team has played each other, go to step two. So Oklahoma State beat Oklahoma and K-State, and under an NFL tiebreaker, if you swept the other two, that would advance you forward.
And that sounds fair. That sounds fair, but K-State and OU didn't play each other.
Yeah, that's not what this rule says. And then it also says something else that no one is talking about, Kevin, that must be talked about. It's a multiple-team tiebreaker. And in the second sentence, it says, after one team has an advantage and is seeded, all remaining teams in the multiple tiebreaker will repeat the multiple team tiebreaking procedure. That's what always happens. In the NFL, if there are three teams, if one team goes forward, like Oklahoma State in my example this year, then you're done. But if, let's say, K-State lost to a three-team tiebreaker with Texas and Oklahoma State, K-State lost to both of them, K-State would be eliminated. This is an important word to listen to. K-State would be eliminated, and then Texas and Oklahoma State would go into a tiebreaker with just two teams. You start all over. Does everyone understand that?
Yep.
If there are four teams, you get rid of one, you go to three. You get one or one, you go to two. You keep and you redo it. You go to the start of the tiebreaker each time. If you understand that, that uses the word elimination. The NFL tiebreaker has the word elimination. If one team's eliminated, then you move on to the tiebreaker. Let me read this again, Kevin, because this does not say eliminated. After one team has an advantage and is seeded, all remaining teams go back and go over. So that would say that any time that one team could be eliminated, but two of them are still together, no team has an advantage to get seeded. The definition of advantage is a circumstance that pulls one in a favorable or superior position. So they got all kinds of problems with their rules and the tiebreaker. They've got to address them all. What they've come out with so far supposedly is, hey, OSU swept OU and K-State, industry standard around the world, you know, the Pac-12
or
NFL is Oklahoma State is in. But K-State and OU can go, where does it say that in the rules? And I keep screaming to no one who will listen to me, but I keep saying, okay, you're changing the rules. You are changing the rules from what it says on the paper.
That's right.
Just tell me what the new rules are, Kevin, because I've got all the tiebreaker situations busted out. There could be four team tiebreakers. There can be three with three different teams. They still have only made one clarification. If Oklahoma State swept the other two, what happens if you haven't swept them?
And the reason
this is a critical thing.
And the
does
reason
advantage
this,
mean eliminate? No.
Yeah, and the reason this matters is playing for a conference title matters for almost all of these teams, winning a conference championship. But beginning next year, winning the conference gets you in the college football playoff. I mean, this matters so much. It's insane. And they cannot, in the Big 12, go forward with 16 teams without having four-team pods and playing eight separate divisions, if you will, eight-team divisions. We'll get into that somewhere on a later date. I mean, you and I are in agreement on this. And how these people like Brett Yormark, and you've got Gene Taylor's here at Kansas State, my God. If they don't go divisions in the Big 12, you're asking for the most controversial stuff we've ever had because the way to get into the college football playoff is to win your league. And if we're sitting here arguing over what the tiebreaker rules are, the whole thing is absolutely insane. So I said this yesterday, and I mean this, and I don't mean to be harsh, but Kansas State fans are the ones that are really livid about this right now because they were winning the tiebreaker until the interpretation was they're losing the tiebreaker. Here's the deal. Go win your last two games and let's take a look at it then. All right. Let's just wait until Sunday and see what happens this weekend, because there's 2 weeks left, so there's no reason to get our panties in a wad over all this yet. Let's see what happens. Now, K-State plays KU on Saturday night. There's no given here. KU's been all over the place on whether Jason Bean's going to play in this game. He said, Leipold said he was very optimistic Bean would play. Then they came back the next day and said, he hasn't practiced and we're planning on going with Ballard. Then the next day, the offensive coordinator comes out and says, oh, we're practicing Bean and he looks pretty good. And then the coach, Leipold, backed that up. What the heck is going on with the quarterback, and do you expect Jason Bean to play Saturday night?
The second part of your question is easier than the first. I think he's going to play, yeah. I mean, this is a rivalry game, and if there's any chance that his knee is fine or he had a concussion, he can get through concussion protocol just fine from one Saturday to the next in most instances. This is a big rivalry game. If his knee is sore, they can adjust the game plan somewhat. I would expect him to play. Lance Leipold, I heard him with my own ears say on Wednesday night, I heard him say that Jason Bean's been practicing. So if you've been practicing, I assume you're going to play. Now, how do you figure out the situation? Man, these things are so complicated, and what goes on behind the scenes is not at all what the public hears, at all. So they know inside that football facility what's going to happen. So the players know exactly what the charge is going to be. Everyone's settled. It doesn't matter if it's Cole Ballard or Jalen Daniels. I mean, the players have been convicted. Like, they know what's going to happen. Here's our charge. Here we go. So it's very calm in the football facility. They're not wondering what the heck's going on. But what they're going to tell the public is anything and everything to get them off the path, right? So, you know, saying that he's practicing may mean that Cole Ballard's definitely the quarterback and they just want everyone to not know what's going on. Who knows? You cannot trust what you hear out of a football facility or the rumors. I wouldn't be surprised if Jalen Daniels played. I mean, why is he missing all these games? There's a million different stories. Is his back really sore? So, you know, I think Jason Bean's going to play. That's what I think. I mean, I sit here today with very little thought about it. I just say, yeah, Jason Bean's going to be out there. And the KU football players might be listening to this podcast and go, oh, you don't know what you're talking about at all. You know, and exactly. I don't. But my thought process is the probabilities of him playing are high. If he practiced at all, if he had concussion protocol, he should make it through that. If his knee's sore, unless it's really, really bad, he can find a way to play even with a sore knee or a stretched ligament. You can put a brace on. I assume Jason Bean's going to be the quarterback.
Well, it's going to be a terrific game. 6 o'clock on Saturday night. Stan Weber will have the call with Wyatt Thompson on the K-State Network. Really great stuff there. Something happened at Mizzou last week that was really interesting, Stan, and I think you'll appreciate this. And I saw this video yesterday. The SEC put this out in like a tweet or a post on X. And it was Cody Schrader, the running back at Missouri, and he's on the sideline with Eli Drinkwitz, and they're pounding Tennessee. And it's in the fourth quarter. And he turns to him and he turns to a coach, Eli Drinkwitz, and says, what does he need? And the coach said he needs 20 or 21 more yards to be the all-time record leader in a game for a Missouri Tiger, all-purpose yards, running and catching. And he turns to the kid and wants to put him back in, and the kid, Schrader, said, we didn't build this thing on setting records and didn't want to go back in the game. He said, you're taking yourself out? And the kid said, yeah, let the other guys play. And then they reiterated this in the locker room after the game, how selfless this former walk-on was, the running back, that basically refused to go in to set the Missouri record for yards in a game. It was unbelievable, mic'd up, to see this happen. And Eli Drinkwitz, you know, he often comes off kind of goofy and funny. He wanted to score another touchdown. He wanted to run it up. There's no doubt. I mean, I actually kind of like that about Eli Drinkwitz. It's very SEC to me that if I'm better than you, I'm just going to go ahead and pound you. You scored 60-some on me last year. I'm just going to keep going. My guy's going to keep scoring on you. Now, that may not be the wisest thing for the rest of the season for injuries and whatever, but I kind of like that about Eli Drinkwitz. Can you believe the coach and the player were on different pages on something like that? And what does that say about the young man that didn't want to go back in the game to set the record?
Well, there's just nothing more positive that you could say about Cody Schrader for what he's done in his career. It's just amazing. At Truman State, he had over 3,000 yards rushing. And he goes to Mizzou and says, I'd like to give it a shot. And they say, well, come on, we'll let you walk on. And the kid turns into a starter, Kevin. So it's an amazing story last year when he gained 744 yards and averaged 4.4 yards a carry. He was a legitimate SEC starting player. But this year, he transformed his body. He is faster and more physical. He's more refined in catching the football. And he's a leading rusher in the SEC. And he is so humble. I mean, when they gave him the game ball afterwards, because he became, I believe, the first player in SEC history to have over 200 yards rushing and over 100 yards receiving in the same game. So he did set some records, even though it wasn't the one you're talking about. He immediately said, I appreciate you guys giving me this award, but it's really about those offensive linemen and those guys that blocked for me. And it's the same humble thought process and commentary that you just talked about that he had on the sideline. That's not about him. What a good thing they have going on at Missouri, because you got Brady Cook, when the Mizzou fans were booing him early in the year, you know, after the Middle Tennessee State game, getting ready for K-State, they had no confidence in him. And all he said is, I've always dreamt of being the Missouri Tiger quarterback.
Yeah.
You know, this kid's saying everything right. When you start having your leaders like Brady Cook and now Cody Schrader say, we're from the state, we care about this team, and we care about winning and a team more than individuality, that's when you get magic. And that's what Missouri's putting together right now, Kevin.
Yeah.
A magical season.
You're right.
And for a 10-win season.
And you talk about momentum all the time in college football. And I've not studied every team around the country, but I don't think any one single play has mattered more in a season than Missouri making that 61-yard field goal against Kansas State. They went into the game wanting to fire their coach and get rid of their quarterback, and they came out and they're going to turn it into a 10-2 season, which, if this were next year, would put them in the college football playoff.
Yeah, they missed it by 1 year, boy. But you're exactly right. The K-State game was everything. But the thing was, is they pointed to that all summer long, you know, and all fall. And they really did a good job of putting the emphasis where it needed to be. We win this game, and this could catapult us to a whole nother level. And I think you're right. The Missouri fans do not want to hear that. They think that their team was just great, period. But I agree with you. After having a losing record, and he just got to basically 500 at Drinkwitz with two wins in the non-con when K-State walked in. If K-State would have won that game, Missouri, I think right now, would have multiple losses, be a good football team, but I don't think you would have seen Brady Cook transform to a new player, and I don't think you'd see this Missouri Tiger football team as good as it is. This team is playing unbelievable football. We mentioned it when they went into Georgia. Georgia will tear you apart if they find a weakness. If you have one weakness on your team, they have the capability to attack it so aggressively that the game gets completely separated and nothing else matters. Why does Missouri match up pretty well with Georgia? Kevin, I don't know where the weakness is. The receivers are awesome. The quarterback's throwing the ball great. He's protecting the football. He'll run. He'll scramble. He's got a great leader. The offensive line is coming off the ball. Cody Schrader can run the football. He carried it 35 times against Tennessee and still averaged 5.9 yards a carry, 205 yards rushing. They threw it to him five times, Kevin. You know the old stat that's coming up, the new stat in football is targets. They targeted him five times, and he caught it every single time and ran 86 yards after the catch to get 116 yards total receiving. The defense. Tell me who the star of Missouri's defense is, Kevin. We could have a great discussion. We can go on for an hour, and we could pick four, five, six guys and say, I like him the best. There's no weaknesses from defensive line to linebackers, cornerbacks, safeties. Missouri's solid. And then, oh, by the way, the thicker kicker bombs a 61-yard field goal, right? To beat K-State. So Missouri right now is a team that has a multitude of positives, but mostly they don't have an area you can attack. And you add a little momentum to it, a little spark, and things can get really, really good. And we're seeing it right now, because right now Missouri can match up with anybody in the country. Bring on Ohio State, Kevin. Missouri versus Ohio State, if that could happen in a college football playoff game, we'd be watching in the fourth quarter. They could match up with them. They don't have weaknesses. And they got momentum. These teams above them are not that much better than them. The Ohio States of the world, Alabama got beat by Texas, and now they're trying to tell us again that Alabama's unbelievable. They're not anything near what they were 3 years ago, Kevin. The hurdle's not that high to be the best team in the country. You saw Georgia and Missouri play with them pretty evenly on the road. The parity in college football is outrageous.
Pete
Rozelle, the old NFL guy, would say, I love this.
You're right.
College football has parity.
But it is the same teams that just keep winning, even in the close games. It's Georgia, it's Ohio State, it's Michigan. It's the same
ones. We talked about Philadelphia Eagles and the Kansas City Chiefs.
That's exactly right. Yes, that's right.
That's don't get mad. That's what it's about.
That's what it's about.
Parity.
Find a way to win those games.
Make the winning play down the stretch.
Make those plays. Stan, you're the best. You always make great plays here at KKHI. We appreciate that. And next week, we got a little bit of a holiday, Thanksgiving, my favorite holiday, I think. And well, just from a standpoint of the food, I'll just say that. So enjoy your
food
week.
And football.
We're getting into food and football, and we're going to chat with you right after that, after the Chiefs play their game on Thanksgiving weekend. So you enjoy and have a great call on Saturday night with K-State KU, buddy. Thanks for your time as always.
Well, happy Thanksgiving to everybody out there. It's so much fun, Kevin, when I'm out and about doing all different type of things and people come up to me and say, hey, I listened to you on Kevin Keatsman Has Issues, and I just get a big smile on my face. It happens a lot. So happy Thanksgiving to everybody out there, and let's go USA, right?
Thank you, buddy. Appreciate that. Take care.
Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye. He is Stan Weber. That's awesome stuff. He and I love Thanksgiving because we love football, and we love all the food. I think Stan, if I'm not mistaken, I think Stan is a ham guy on Thanksgiving. We'll maybe ask him after Thanksgiving what he had. I think he likes ham better than turkey. Great guy, football inside and out, and what a great season of football this is right now for everyone in our area. Stan Weber brought to you by Earth Effects Outdoor, your new landscape company. If you need a lawn and landscape company, EE Outdoor can build an outdoor kitchen, a fire pit, or a hardscape for you. Maybe you need some landscape lighting, berms, trees, water features. EEOutdoor.com, 816-478-7700 for Earth Effects Outdoor Lawn and Landscape. Buck Roofing and Buck Disposal. One name has it all. 913-384-2680 for a free roof inspection if you want to have Ron's team out to look at your roof. Or if you're looking at disposal containers on your work site, get rid of those big corporations with no customer service. Go with the local guys who will be there in an instant to either deliver or pick up your disposal dumpsters. 913-384-2680 is the number over at Buck. Give him a shout or log on to buckdisposal.com. And, of course, our buddies at Joslyn's Jewelry. What a great weekend this is and time of year to be shopping for something sparkly for the holidays. Joslyn's Jewelry is your holiday headquarters. When you go in there, mention the podcast. Ask for Dave or Cameron. He's the son-in-law. Or Gary. He's in there on Wednesdays and Saturdays. I love Gary Joslyn, the whole team at Joslyn's Jewelry, 95th and Antioch, the jeweler you'll recommend to your friends and family. Big, big weekend of football coming up. I know we didn't really talk about the Missouri-Florida matchup. I mean, we're literally, it's shocking, but here's the point. Here's where we are with Missouri. We just expect them to roll Florida now. I mean, that's where we are with Mizzou. And I think they will. And we talk a lot about betting and sports lines, things like this. I texted my buddies last night. I said, after watching that audio of Eli Drinkwitz on the sideline, where he said, I want to get you back in and run this up. I want another touchdown. I want another touchdown. How do you not bet on Missouri to cover spreads the rest of the way? Because if they got the lead, it looks like they're going to pound anybody they can. But they're just going to keep going. That's what Eli wants to do, is just keep going. If they get up 28-7 on Florida at halftime, they ain't done. They want to get up in the 40s and just crush them. I promise you, that's what they want to do. So I have seen the light. I am all in on the Tigers the last 2 weeks. I don't care what the spread is against Florida and that pathetic Arkansas team. I'm going Ole Mizzou in both of them because I'm watching a coach that's feeling it. And if he gets a chance to run it up, he's going to do it. I think Missouri wins big Saturday. I think the Chiefs and Eagles goes down to the last 2 minutes. I'll take Chiefs by a field goal in that thing, but I don't feel great about it. We'll just have to see. The Chiefs' defense may be the difference in that game. And I will take K-State over KU with Jason Bean playing on Saturday night. I just think K-State is a more complete team. They're very good defensively, and I think they're just a little bit more complete. Obviously, turnovers can be a big variable and things like that. K-State has not been good on the road. They have not won close games on the road. If this game is close, if Kansas State does not build a double-digit lead in this game and keep KU kind of at bay, Kansas State has shown they will lose that game. They will lose a close game in Lawrence. So I think it's either going to be K-State by 14 or 17, or KU's going to win at the very end in a very close game. But I'm going to go Kansas State gets the win. I read the last time KU beat K-State, George Bush was president. They'll try to keep that streak alive on Saturday night in Lawrence. It's this episode of KKHI. Don't forget to hit that like or follow button and tell your friends whenever you run into somebody that you think Kevin Keatsman has issues.
Thanks for listening to Kevin Keatsman Has Issues, presented by Roberts Robinson Chevrolet GMC. To get exclusive patrons-only podcasts, receive a weekly newsletter, and attend in-person patrons-only parties, visit kkhasissues.com and become a patron today. This has been a production of Crooked Tail Media Incorporated.